For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you guys about BetOnline.ag. Welcome to the madness in March, everybody. 4 weeks of college basketball fever. On the men's side, your favorites to win are Houston, defending champion UConn, Purdue, who's choked each of the last 3 years, so many options on the table. On the epic women's side of the bracket, Iowa's your betting favorite. South Carolina's the undefeated champion. The big three of Angel Reese, Haley Van Lith, and Morrow at LSU. Juju Watkins and USC. Tara Vanderveer's Stanford team. So many teams on the table, and if you want to bet on any and all of them, BetOnline Sportsbook has you covered before the big dance. Use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to pick up a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the link in the description to this episode. Click on that link in the description to this episode. Bet online, where the game starts. Perfect. How are you doing?
I'm well. Ready to go. I'm excited to talk conference championship week coming up here.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. It's, I guess, what you might call unofficial March Madness at this point. I know a few teams have already punched their tickets to the big dance. And of course, Razor Rosenthal for many years now has been the go-to college basketball expert. First off, what did you make of quote-unquote rivalry week? I know it's not exactly rivalry week anymore, but you get Duke and North Carolina, and that always seems to bring the best out of people. So what did you make of the last week of the regular season here going into conference championship week?
I think the game that stood out the most was the pounding that Kansas took down in Southeast Texas when they traveled to Houston. And that was remarkable, Kyle. That really gave me more confidence in the Houston Cougars, which I think when I came on your podcast about 10 days ago, I was a little reluctant to, you know, write them in as one of the top four teams, a team that I really trust to get to the Final Four. But boy, they just really showed how much faster they are than KU. The depth of Houston is there. It was really on display against Kansas. They could rotate a lot of guys out. So that stood out more than anything. That was probably the best performance of the year by any team playing against a team. Now, you have to remember, any team against, you know, a conference rival. Kansas blew out Houston in Lawrence back in January. So I thought that, or February, that was a remarkable performance by the Houston Cougars. Shifting gears out to Tobacco Road at Carolina Duke. Duke coming in as a 5.5-point favorite was really alarming to me. And sometimes as a gambler, there's a saying out there, if it looks too easy, sometimes it is. And with Carolina catching that many points, I had to jump on the bandwagon. You know, I was like, wow, I really don't see how this is possible. I'm going to be a sucker here, and I'm going to roll with this. But I have an anticipation that this game is either going to be won by Carolina somehow, or Duke will maybe cover at a very small margin. I just don't see how Duke is capable of blowing out Carolina. So they clearly didn't. A wire-to-wire win once again in Durham for UNC. So that game didn't have a ton of drama to it, right? I mean, Carolina in firm control. Again, I think another team that is really interesting, we'll shift gears to the Big Ten. Two teams going in completely different directions, Indiana and Michigan State. Indiana winners, I believe, of four in a row. You know, can they win a few rounds in Minneapolis to somehow get to the big dance? That would be a really tall task. But, you know, as a sixth seed, if they can knock off the three seed, Nebraska, and if they can somehow knock off the two seed Illinois, maybe Indiana is in contention to get into the dance. And then there's Michigan State, who again loses to Indiana yesterday in a heartbreaker. They just keep losing, Kyle. And it's just like, this is a really good team that just cannot find ways to win. I think they're still in the tournament, maybe on that 9 or 10 line, but they are slipping by the day. And now they're going to have to go play Minnesota in Minneapolis in the second round of the Big Ten championship as an 8-9 game. So I found those that game very, very interesting yesterday afternoon.
What do you think? And I kind of want to talk about the Big Ten tournament now, because the Big Ten tournament is always interesting because, you know, they're going to put 8-9 teams in the tournament usually, and teams that play in the first round will be in like an 8-9 matchup, and it could be a win and your season is still alive situation. But according to our buddy Joe Lenardi, it looks like there's only going to be like 5, maybe 6 Big Ten teams this year. So does that make it even more significant if a 7, 8, 9 team like an Indiana goes on a run through the tournament to potentially add another team to the field? Or are we looking at a scenario where poor showing at the conference tournament, that 5 or 6 number could go down to even 4 or 5 when talking about the Big Ten?
Well, you have two teams that can play themselves completely out of this tournament. Let's start with the two teams I just mentioned, Michigan State. They lose to Minnesota. You have to look at them on the committee and ask yourself, how do we put in a team that has lost 5 games in a row, 6 out of their last 7? How many quad one wins do they have? You'd have to look that up. I don't know. Michigan State has to beat Minnesota, I think, to secure themselves. Indiana has to beat Nebraska in round number 2. Those two teams, and I think they have to do a little bit more. Wisconsin, I think, is firmly in. They are the 5th seed in the Big Ten. So let's put Wisconsin into the tournament. And Northwestern, I think Northwestern is somewhat safely in this tournament as well. But I tell you what, if they can beat Wisconsin in the quarterfinals, lock them in there. So the Big Ten is really down. I mean, teams that have been huge disappointments that you thought would be a little bit better. We could start with Rutgers and Maryland as the two teams that I felt like, you know, going into the season had a chance to maybe, you know, fight their way to the bubble. But boy, have they been such disappointments. Maryland run out of the gym last night at Penn State. So it looks like, I think if Vegas can put some numbers out there, how many Big Ten teams are available to make the tournament this year today, I would say it's 5.5. Now you got a chance to bet the over under. It's going to be a little bit juicy at 5.5.
Okay, that makes sense. And I'm looking at the bracketology thing. They have Northwestern as an 8. They have Wisconsin as a 6. Nebraska and Michigan State are both 9s, but we've seen in past years, like 9 seed going into the conference tournament isn't secure because team goes on a run, steals an automatic bid, your chances decrease. Hell, I mean, Indiana State, their season is done at this point. They already played their conference tournament, and I wouldn't want to be in their position as one of the like last 4 in today because you have no idea whether teams that are in the tournament are going to fall or if someone's going to bid steal. I mean, I would just hate to be one of the teams in the 10-11 line going into conference tournament week, especially if you're like an Indiana State and you can't control your own destiny, or if you're Michigan State where you lose your first game and all of a sudden it's like, well, we've got 5 days of tournament left and no one knows what's going to happen.
I think Michigan State right now has put themselves in a little bit of danger. I think if they could beat Minnesota, that's probably the ticket they need to be punched, stay on that 8-9-10 line. But they lose to Minnesota on a neutral court. Technically, it is a neutral court, even though the game's played in Minneapolis. It is, in my opinion, something to consider to take them out of this tournament and put a team like Indiana State in. Ironically, how about that? Indiana State versus Michigan State for one of the final spots, the Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson national championship game from whatever year that was back. Was it 79 perhaps? But yeah, Michigan State's a fascinating team. I really don't want to play them if you're an 8 seed or a 9 seed, because I think that the talent level they have surpasses so many other teams, but they are not gelling. They go on major scoring droughts all the time in these games. So Sparty's just a team I just don't want to play against or play when it comes to betting. I want to see them in there. I like Blue Bloods in the tournament, Kyle, and I think they're good enough to do some damage if they somehow get into the tournament.
Last thing I'll talk about with the Big Ten is just last week or 2 weeks ago when you came on, we just spent like 5 minutes making jokes about Purdue because Purdue's lost the last 3 years to, I believe it was North Texas, St. Peter's, and Fairleigh Dickinson in the tournament. Zach Edey might be the first 2-time college player of the year since Ralph Sampson. They're probably going to be the number 1 overall seed unless they just absolutely crap the bed at the Big Ten tournament. Have your feelings moved on this Purdue team at all since we were just out here joking about how much they were chokers?
No, not at all. I mean, I think it comes down to the real pressure points are going to transpire 2 weeks from now, right? Not against Wisconsin at home that we saw yesterday in a horrific bad beat loss. If you had Purdue -8.5, the win at Illinois was somewhat impressive, but it wasn't a runaway type of victory where I was just thoroughly impressed by Purdue. As a matter of fact, Illinois had chances to really knock them out, and early on they just couldn't do it. So I think Purdue is a team that is completely capable of winning the national championship. They should win the national championship. Nobody can stop Edie, right? I mean, who is going to stop Edie at the five position? But do you trust them? The answer is no. Will I have some brackets with Purdue getting very far? Yes. And will I have brackets where Purdue will lose to a four seed? Probably so. But no, I don't think the last 10 days should give you any confidence in Matt Painter and his ability to navigate a tournament of 64 teams.
All right, let's go to the Big East tournament. By the time people are listening to this, the first round is probably tipped off in that tournament. And hey, Rick Pitino somehow found his backdoor way into the tournament somehow. I think they're on the last four in right now, according to Lenardi. They're a five seed in the tournament, so they automatically get to go to the round of eight, which means they kind of only have to win one game and they're probably in the tournament. How the hell did that one happen?
Pretty good team. I mean, I think Seton Hall is a better team. Obviously, Seton Hall, I think, has swept St. John's this year, if I remember correctly. But I think that this team is, no superstars, not a lot of depth. But, you know, Pitino's a good enough coach to make it interesting and figure out a way to navigate to this tournament. The Big East is really good. I mean, I really think that the top six teams in the Big East are going to give anybody trouble in the big dance. So I think it's the game of the day, potentially, for all conferences to be watching Hall versus Johns in the
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Arden, right? I mean, how much better does it get than that? So I think it's, to me, the Big East tournament is the conference championship tournament that I want to watch the most, just because I think the fan base cares the most. We have a lot of the same teams now for the last 8-9 years. I know we have Marquette and Creighton involved. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but they seem to become a staple now of the Big East, and two teams that continue to be the elite of the Big East over the last 5 years. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to see Pitino in the tournament, and I think that St. John's Hall game is going to be massive for St. John's. They win that game, Kyle, they're in pretty easily. So, yeah, I think it's probably the more – interesting games of the whole conference championship week.
Yeah, and I would assume most of these teams are in, except for maybe Villanova. It looks like Villanova is right on the edge right now, and you know, if they lose to Marquette, I don't know if they'll get kept out because they're one of the unofficial blue bloods now. I know people don't think of blue blood historically as Villanova, but they've won championships in three different decades now, I think. But yeah, it seems like there's six teams, three are really good and three are going to be on the 8-9 line in the first round of the tournament, or maybe a first four for one of them or something like that. It seems like there's three good teams in the Big East this year.
Well, Nova may not be your father's blue blood, but I believe they are blue blood. I mean, what they have done over the last 10 years in this tournament, I mean, starting back, I think the Final Four run in 2009, when they lost to Carolina, and then just beyond that, I mean, how many Final Fours has Nova participated since 2009? My guess would be four or five. I mean, that's blue blood to me. But Villanova, yeah, I think they're better than St. John's. They just haven't given you that resume to prove that. I think Villanova, if they can somehow beat Marquette, I give them a puncher's chance to get into the tournament. Now, without Tyler Kolek, I think Villanova on a neutral court can beat Marquette. I love Marquette, but they're not healthy. And I think that scares me a little bit right now. And I think Villanova has their shot. And can they beat Creighton on a neutral court? Well, they had a chance to beat Creighton at home. What a comeback by Villanova. That one will sting for a while, especially if they lose to Marquette, because if they would have beat Creighton, then they would have been staring themselves in maybe a first four in scenario. But like I said, the Big East tournament to me will have the most pageantry.
Yeah, it looks like Jay Wright went to four Final Fours in his time at Villanova, which checks out. You know, he's a Hall of Fame coach for a reason. They won the two championships. This is kind of a different direction, but it's just funny because they're playing each other in the tournament. Providence versus Georgetown, which is, for those who don't know, Ed Cooley, who was the coach at Providence for like a decade, is now the coach at Georgetown, and Providence is better than Georgetown this year. I was talking about this with my brother, who's a bigger college basketball fan. I was just curious, did Ed Cooley make a mistake by switching jobs in the conference? I know Georgetown has more resources, and that was part of the reason was a pay raise, but in terms of the state of the programs, did he make a mistake by jumping from Providence to Georgetown?
So I'll put myself in his shoes, and I think I would take the Georgetown job. It's an elite university institution with a lot more history, but unfortunately, the young student athletes don't know the history of Georgetown, which honestly really hasn't been any history over the last two decades. But I think you look at, where do you want to live? Where do you want to raise your family? Providence, Rhode Island, or DC, the DMV area? To me, it's the DMV area. Are there more resources at Georgetown? Not necessarily, maybe. I mean, because, you know, what people don't realize is that, you know, Georgetown basketball plays their home games, you know, in downtown DC, in Chinatown, right? A gallery place. And that's not really convenient to students. It's a real pain in the butt to get there, Kyle. So there's not a whole lot of tradition that is seen at Georgetown. There's not a whole lot of fan base. It looks bad on paper moving from Providence to Georgetown, but I think it's probably the right move. I'm sure from a financial standpoint, from a history standpoint, based on his age, he sees the potential, obviously. That's why he made that directional step. But right now, it's not going to pay off for a while. I hope it does. I love Georgetown. I think it's a great tradition. Back when I was a kid, Georgetown was a force to be reckoned with. And I think that Providence, can you win at Providence? Sure, you can. We've seen it happen. But I like the move for him. I really do. It's just going to take a lot of time.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the sentiment I got. And I understand the history. And at the same time, Georgetown, in my lifetime, the only great team that they had lost to Florida Gulf Coast, I think, which at the time was a really big deal because there weren't a lot. I think there had never been a 15 seed that had gone to the Sweet 16. But that's basically the one time I remember Georgetown being a great team, was the year that they lost to the Dunk City Florida Gulf Coast team. So
I think that was a 2-15 game as well. I think Georgetown was a 2 seed and got run out of the gym by Dunk City, as you alluded to. And then, of course, Roy Hibbert, his number 2 seed team back in the mid-2000s, late-2000s, lost to my Wolfpack, who were a 7 seed. So there is history there, but there's just not a lot right now to be excited about for Georgetown.
All right, let's swing over to – let's go SEC tournament. What do you make of the SEC tournament going into this year? It looks like Tennessee has a puncher's chance of being on the one line now, even though they lost to – Kentucky the last game of the season.
I watched that whole game, Kyle. Okay, I watched every minute of that game because I had the Duke Carolina game queued up. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna sit on my couch and watch Tennessee, Kentucky, Duke Carolina back to back, not moving. What I learned is that Tennessee has hesitant scorers outside of Dalton Connect, and that is what scares me. When you go to the NCAA tournament, you're going to need a collective group of 3 or 4 guys that you can rely on to put the ball in the basket when it matters. And yes, they do have players. I mean, Ziegler's really good, and a lot of other players are really good, but nobody wanted the rock except Kinnett. And I think that's scary to me. And Kentucky was running fast. The ball movement was great. You have several players that were scoring. I'm a little hesitant with Tennessee now compared to 10 days ago, because this is the first time in many weeks where I watched the game from start to finish. And I really liked what I saw out of a young Kentucky team. have finally maturated through this season. They look really good. So I like Kentucky now, maybe to win this whole tournament down in Nashville, Tennessee. I think it's Kentucky's tournament to lose. They're playing really good ball. Alabama and Auburn, they're really good. I think they slip up. They have some stinkers. I mean, look at Alabama run out of the gym in Gainesville. I think it was last Monday night when they got crushed by the Gators. Auburn, we've seen them put up some stinkers as well. They got blown out by Kentucky. So give me Kentucky right now as the odds-on favorite to win in Nashville, Tennessee this weekend.
What do you think of South Carolina at this point? They're going to be in the tournament. It looks like Lenardi has them on the 5 line right now. Are they a team that is interesting? As someone who is caping up for 5 seed, or I think was Creighton. I think Creighton was a 6 seed last year. I know San Diego State was a 5, and they made it to the championship round. What do you think about South Carolina?
You know, I use the F word often on your podcast, right? And I don't want to use it this time, but I think I'm going to have to use it. I think they're a little fugazi. I think they're a team that has taken advantage of the bad teams in the SEC. Yes, they have some good wins. Don't get me wrong. But they take care of business, which I like a lot. They take care of the Vanderbilts, and they take care of the A&Ms, and they take care of the Missouri Tigers. And that's what you need to do to continue on in your path to get to the tournament. I don't think South Carolina has the guard play and the depth to make a second weekend run in the big dance. I don't think they play tremendous defense. Mississippi State, that game, I mean, Mississippi State, they should have won that game and they didn't, but that's a good win. That's a good win in Starkville for South Carolina. So South Carolina, they're winning those type of games, which is really good. And it really helps you enter the big dance as a 5 or 6 seed. But no, I don't like them that much, Kyle. I don't consider them in the upper echelon of the top 3 of the SEC. You can maybe put them in there with Alabama, but I do like Auburn, Tennessee, and UK a lot more than South Carolina.
All right. Looks like the SEC is going to put a similar 6 or 7 teams into the tournament. Big 12 tournament. So Houston's the number 1 seed. I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, is there any result Houston could put forward that would knock them off the 1 line going into March Madness?
No. Okay. I think even if they lost in their first round matchup, I don't see how it's possible because of the way they destroyed KU on Saturday afternoon. I think that cemented themselves on the 1 line. Would they be the overall number 1 seed, have a chance of that? Absolutely not. But does that matter? And no. So to answer your question, no. I think they're a 1. I think that Purdue's a 1, and I think Houston is a 1. And I think UConn is a 1. I think all 3 of those teams can lose in the first round of their conference championship and find themselves on the 1 line.
So after that, we obviously know Kansas. They were great this year. They ended up kind of flopping at the end. But after that, it says there's going to be 9 teams in the tournament, according to our buddy Ken Baum. And other than Iowa State, who I'm still surprised is as good as the rankings say they are. Iowa State might be my UConn this year, where I was like, oh, snap, Iowa State's good. Other than like Iowa State and maybe Kansas. But Kansas, as you said, is a little bit, I don't want to use the F word, fugazi a little bit. How are we getting to 9 teams? Like, who are the ones that matter in the Big Ten? Is Baylor important? Is Texas important? Or are they just filling 7, 8, 9, 10 spots?
Yeah, I think you may have hit it. I think Baylor and Texas are too inconsistent to give you that excitement and that confidence to, on your bracket, pencil them in to the Elite Eight. I mean, they're capable. I think both of those teams, Baylor and Texas, could have a San Diego State, Creighton, University of Miami-like run to the Elite Eight, Final Four this year. It's just matchup dependent. I think the Big 12 is clearly the best conference, and obviously you see that with Ken Pom's rankings and Lenardi's predictions of how many teams are going to enter. I like Texas more probably as much as Baylor. I mean, they lost to Baylor on Monday night, Kyle. But they were up by 14 in Waco, and I don't even know how. Not only did they lose the game, they didn't even cover the number, which I think was 6.5. I think they lost by a touchdown. So I like Baylor and Texas. I sort of like Oklahoma, another fast, dangerous team. But do you trust them to make a run as a 10 seed? Probably not. I just think that you're going to get a lot of Big 12 teams in there, and nobody's probably really going to make a big run, in my opinion, except for ISU and Houston. I think even Kansas, for the first time ever, they don't have much depth. They could be a three seed in trouble against a hungry 14, and maybe they get dumped on the second round by a six seed like Creighton. So I don't trust KU that much. I only trust the top two teams in the Big 12.
Yeah, if Ken Pom had his way, he would have Kansas on the five line, it looks like, based on rankings here.
Yeah, I think KU.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
In order for them to secure their three seed, they have to reach the Final Four of the Big 12 championship. And I think they probably will. That's their core. Kansas City is where they do damage. How many years in a row have they been to the semifinals or finals of the Big 12 championship? It's just a guarantee, it seems like, for KU. But I don't trust this team, Kyle. I think they have four really good players, and then it gets so murky from there as far as their depth goes. So if KU lands on the four line, I would be reluctant to say that they can maybe get through a 13 or probably their five opponent. But we'll see. Again, it's all matchup dependent. If Hunter Dickerson has an easy matchup, he could really, you could feed him the rock, kind of like an Edie situation, and then he can go off and KU can emerge pretty easily. So it really just comes down to who they play.
Well, it looks like based on the bracket ranking, so they would play in the first round either West Virginia or Cincinnati. I mean, that's, a first-round play-in game for both of those teams. Say they beat whoever wins that, then they would go to the quarterfinal, and Kansas would play against Baylor as a 6-3 matchup, which is interesting from their standpoint. Similarly with Texas, Texas could beat K-State in the first round of the Big 12 tournament, and then they would have Iowa State, which is, if you told me that Texas and Kansas both advanced, that wouldn't be super surprising, given the one-game sample sizes in a conference that's going to put 8 or 9 teams into the tournament.
Oh, I agree. I think Texas on a neutral could beat Iowa State. I think Baylor on a neutral could beat KU. On a neutral, KU could beat Baylor. It's going to be a great tournament. I think the only team that I want to pencil in to the championship in Kansas City is Houston, because Iowa State's going to have a tough road ahead, right? They're the two seed, and they're going to have Texas in there, you said, and then the potential semifinal matchup will be against Baylor and Kansas. It's just not easy, right? I think Houston is pretty lucky to be on the top side of that draw with the teams that we haven't mentioned, I would imagine, are going to be a lot weaker, such as Oklahoma is probably in there, right? Kansas State, teams that don't, I just don't think are going to put any threat to Houston.
So here's Houston's path. Houston, as the number one, plays the winner of 8-9, which is TCU versus Oklahoma. So they play whoever wins that game. And then if they get to the semifinal, they would play either BYU or Texas Tech.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the matchups for Houston there. I mean, I think they got away with it to avoid Texas, Baylor, KU, and ISU on the completely opposite side of the bracket. That bottom half of the Big 12 bracket is brutal. And I think anybody can win that in the bottom half, but I think the top half, if I had to place a bet on it and you gave me Houston to the finals, anything south of -400, I think I would take.
All right, so you are convinced that they can beat TCU, who TCU is going to get in the tournament, you think?
I think possibly Oklahoma and TCU. That's a play-in game, possibly, right? I mean, they're really close, both of these teams. I think the winner is going to sleep really well at night going into the Houston game with nothing to lose and hopefully, everything to gain as far as, hey, we're probably in the dance. Let's go shock the world. The loser is going to probably, have their fingers and their nails in their mouth waiting to see what happens on Selection Sunday. But I think they're both pretty darn good teams. It's pretty remarkable that they're 8-9 seeds in the Big 12 tournament, where you can make an argument that they're good enough to be 8-9 seeds in the Big Dance.
Yeah, it looks like TCU's on the 10 line. Oklahoma's on the 9 line right now, and they're 8-9 in this tournament. It's like the old Big Ten tournament where they were going to put 8-9 teams in the tournament every year. That's what the Big 12 is now, as the, you said, best conference in college basketball this year, right?
100%. I mean, honestly, like from a depth standpoint, maybe the only other conference that I like, you know, even the Mountain West is probably up there, but it's just there's nothing else that compares to it. I would say if you want to make any comparison, it would be the Big East. If Villanova would actually have some of these wins that they've lost, heartbreak losses by Villanova this year, then I can say, well, there's a little bit of depth there, but there's just not. It's just no comparison. So Mountain West, Big 12, to me, are the best conferences in college basketball.
All right, let's swing over to what's next. Let's say ACC. Let's go down to your neck of the woods. What do you make of the ACC tournament this year? Is there a chance North Carolina could end up on the one line when it's all said and done? And how many teams are they actually going to put in? Because KenPom only guarantees them four. And even of the four, I believe Virginia is the last four in. So it's basically just Duke, Carolina, and one other team who I can't seem to remember.
It's probably Clemson. Clemson has some pretty good quad one wins. Let's just start with the venue. Should never be in Washington, D.C. I want to throw that out. So we'll start with that. Yes, Carolina should be a one seed. If they emerge victorious in the nation's capital, if Tennessee does not win the SEC championship, and if Arizona does not win in Vegas, I would say it's more important for Carolina that Tennessee doesn't win in Nashville, because Arizona, to me, has had so many just bad games, whether they're wins or losses. It's a very talented team. I think I love Arizona's team. But listen, I think they got swept by Wazoo this year. So it's really tough for me to navigate Arizona on the one line. I would say Carolina is in really good shape if Tennessee doesn't win in Nashville and Carolina wins in D.C. And I think they're the overwhelming favorite to do so. I don't think there's anybody on that top half of the draw, Kyle, that presents any threat to UNC. Pittsburgh, Wake Forest in that 4-5 game, that's a joke. That's probably the worst 4-5 seeds I've seen in the modern era of ACC hoops. I mean, that is a cakewalk of a draw for Carolina. And I think the bottom half isn't so difficult to navigate for Duke, because they don't have to play both Clemson and UVA. One of those teams is going to knock each other out. I think UVA is a tournament team, but they're going to have to beat Clemson to secure their bid. But I wouldn't be surprised if the loser of UVA-Clemson is out. I don't know. I mean, this conference is bad, Kyle. It's Carolina's opportunity to shine. Duke is your conference champions last year. They won the ACC championship, but it's just bad. What do you want me to say? It's a bad conference this year. It's bad. It's bad. When your fourth seed is Pitt and they are not in the tournament, I don't know what to tell you. That's about as bad as it gets for this conference.
I do think, now that you mention it, Clemson is probably in, because KenPom has them 24, which would be on the sixth line. They're five according to Lenardi right now. So I think Clemson's probably safe no matter what. But
they're safe. I should say this. I say if Virginia loses to Clemson, they're probably out, but Clemson doesn't have to beat Virginia.
So there's three teams. There's three ACC. The Mountain West is going to have more teams than the ACC.
Double the teams, possibly six, right? Possibly three from the Atlantic Coast and possibly six from the Mountain West. Yeah.
All right. Well, we don't need to harp on it any longer. Let's go to a real basketball conference, the Mountain West tournament, a real basketball conference, unlike the ACC. San Diego State's in. Then there's a bunch of teams that are all probably in, but I'm not used to the Mountain West having the reputation to put five teams in the tournament recently. So I'm a little bit nervous that them beating each other up is going to knock the four teams that should make the tournament, or maybe even five teams that should make the tournament, because Utah State's kind of trying to claw their way in through the back door. I'm worried that them beating each other up will knock themselves out of tournament contention, and their reputation isn't as good as most people think it is.
What's fascinating about this tournament is you have San Diego State on the five line, right? I mean, that That's crazy. I mean, they are probably the best team in the conference, but yet they don't show it on paper. They're seeded five. And UNLV is the four, and Utah State's the one. And, you know, what, Nevada, the Wolfpack are the two seed. Do I have that right, Kyle, when I read that?
Yes.
I mean, Colorado State's the seven. I mean, it's just a bizarre conference with a lot of good teams. Listen, I think that the best team in the conference is probably Utah State. Let's just throw that out. I think the team that really needs to emerge and put themselves in a position to secure a bid in the tournament, the Running Rebels can do that with a first-round win against San Diego State. And I think they can honestly knock off on a neutral court Utah State. I like the Rebs. I think it'll be interesting. Then the other team from Nevada, the Wolfpack. I mean, that's a tough matchup to play Colorado State first round. I think they could do it. I think they can make a run in this tournament. I think this is going to be a really intriguing tournament. I think that Boise versus New Mexico, that's an incredible quarterfinal. So all eyes should be on the Mountain West tournament, because you're going to see quarterfinals that are going to be remarkable. UNLV versus San Diego State, Nevada versus Colorado State, Boise State versus New Mexico. I know they don't get the attention out east, but as a guy that bets this game and watches this game, I think those quarterfinal matchups are the best quarterfinal matchups by far, bar none, outside of potential Big 12 matchups. Nobody else can give me the excitement of UNLV, San Diego State, Nevada, Colorado State, and Boise State versus New Mexico. All of those teams I just mentioned are battling for the right to get to the tournament and just improve their seeding as well. I mean, San Diego State, you know, they need to beat UNLV, because I don't think San Diego State wants to find themselves on a low seeded line. Like, you know the difference between being a 5 or 6 seed in the tournament versus an 8 or 9. San Diego State needs to win this game. They want to continue to improve their seeding, and I think they want to give themselves a chance to win this tournament.
Yes, and UNLV desperately needs that win against San Diego State, because they don't have very many big wins. Also, I think UNLV lost by like 30 points to Air Force earlier this year, and Air Force like won one conference game this year. So like, yeah, UNLV kind of does need some help still, even though they're the four seed in that conference tournament. Even Colorado State, I know I said Utah State's trying to backdoor their way in earlier. I meant Colorado State. Colorado State is, God, they're right on the edge, and they're in that same thing we were talking about earlier with
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Indiana State and our guy Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like, you lose the first round of the tournament, you're just sitting there for 3 days waiting to see what happens and who's going to steal bids and all sorts of stuff, because I don't think Colorado State feels good about losing in the first round of the Mountain West tournament, given they're already on the bubble.
I think Colorado State versus Nevada is going to be so fascinating, because Kyle, you may see for the first time that I can remember in conference championship history where the 7th seed is probably favored over the 2 seed. I mean, I would say Colorado State on a neutral is 2.5 against Nevada. Maybe just north, maybe just south. I would be pretty surprised to see Nevada as a favorite, 1.5, 2.5. Shock me, but it would surprise me a little bit. That just shows you how incredible this conference is, where the 7th seed is a possible favorite against a 2 seed. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's interesting, because this is the classic conversation of resume versus the actual skill of the team that's playing. Because Nevada, no question, they're in the tournament. Nobody's really questioning it. And you're saying that head-to-head against Colorado State, yeah, Colorado State's a better team, but because they dropped games at different points in the season, they have to kind of fight to get their way into the tournament. It's interesting how that works out. I think the same thing's probably working for New Mexico, because New Mexico, what would New Mexico be underdogs against Boise State, for example, in a 6-3 game?
That's tough too. I honestly don't know where I would make New Mexico Boise State on a neutral. I almost would say that. Oh man, Kyle, that's a pick 'em. That's a tough one. I mean, I'd have to look at the head to head between the two teams, New Mexico versus Boise State. Let's take a look at what happened here. I actually pulled up my phone, and we could see what they did against New Mexico. Boise State won that game at New Mexico. That's impressive. They won pretty handily, and then they beat them at home. So, yeah, Boise, apparently a bad matchup for New Mexico, and I would say that Boise State would probably be favored in that situation.
Okay, and again, Boise's probably in the tournament right now. New Mexico's,
they're in the tournament, yeah.
Yeah, New Mexico they're State's right. Fighting for a spot. It's interesting how deep the conference is. It's happened a couple times before in my lifetime for sure, but I have I'm just not used to seeing the Mountain West be on top like this, especially as all the other conferences kind of spread out their it spreads out the rest of the teams here in the other conferences, and realignment makes the conferences not put 8-9 teams in the tournament anymore. It's interesting to see how that plays out. I think we knocked out all the major conference tournaments here, so I'll just turn it over to you. Who are the others here? I know you got St. Mary's and Gonzaga back, although neither of them is a top 3 or 4 seed this year. You got the A-10. I mentioned the run for Drake and now Indiana State, waiting to see what's going to happen. Who are the others in this year's tournament besides the 6 brackets that we just went through, or 7 brackets we just went through?
I was really impressed yesterday with both Drake and Indiana State. Indiana State was down by, 75 points, it felt like, and took a 1-point lead at the end of the game with about 2.5 minutes to go, and Drake emerged victorious. I think Indiana State deserves to be in the tournament. I think they'd be a very dangerous team. They push the ball down the floor. I think Drake is a really good mid-major. Those two teams, to me, are just as scary as the two teams you mentioned out of the West Coast Conference, Gonzaga and St. Mary's. St. Mary's is a better team than all of them, I think. But that's going to be an interesting tournament to watch. That starts tonight, the Final Four in Las Vegas, I believe. Gonzaga will face San Francisco, and I think St. Mary's faces Santa Clara. I think that both Gonzaga and St. Mary's emerge, and I'd like to see that championship game unfold between those two teams. Listen, Gonzaga is a team that has experience, right? You know, they have experience in this tournament. Their coaching staff does. They still have about 1 or 2 players left over from their elite team. So maybe Gonzaga scares me a little bit, but not too much. I think of all the teams that scare me from the mid-majors would be St. Mary's and Utah State. Those are the two teams that I think make a run could make a run in this tournament like we've seen before with the FAUs and San Diego States. Now, let's shift gears real quick to FAU and South Florida. Really impressed by both of those teams. FAU has somewhat held serve. They didn't win their conference regular season championship, but I think FAU really needs to find themselves on the 7-10 line and not so much the 8-9 line, because I don't think they are capable of probably beating Purdue, UConn, or Houston. But I really think they're good enough to beat some of these other teams. And I think that FAU is so dangerous when they're on. I mean, I've watched them play all season long. I have rode the FAU train. I've had some losses with them. I've seen them get run out of the gym at times. But I saw them beat Arizona in Las Vegas. And I've seen them absolutely destroy Memphis this past weekend at times. I mean, they were running Memphis out of the gym, and Memphis only lost by 8. I think FAU's dangerous. I think they have a chance. I think South Florida is really good, Kyle. People don't realize they are a bunch of bruisers down there in Tampa, Florida. But South Florida, I think, has to possibly win their conference championship to lock up that bid. I don't know how many quad one wins they have, but I feel like it's FAU's bid to that. That's almost a lock. So I'd like to see FAU on the 7-10 line to avoid a 1 seed and make another run.
That is Razor Rosenthal. He is our college basketball analyst through all of March Madness. You can check out Razor on his Twitter account. It's linked in the description of this episode. Please give Razor a follow. You're going to follow his gambling escapades through Champ Week, and maybe we'll have him back right before March Madness so we can evaluate the bracket. Real quick before you go, I do know that we're recording this Monday morning, which means that NFL free agency has just opened up, and there's all sorts of wacky things that are popping up and popping in as we're recording here. So just real quick, I want some boom, boom right off the bat. Razor Rosenthal reacts to some of the biggest NFL stories that are going on right now, because there's a bunch of stuff that's going to be moving and shaking by the time we release this podcast. And we only know but so much at this point. So first thing I'm curious about, Razor, what do you think of Russell Wilson going to the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, if you look at the money line for Pittsburgh to win the Super Bowl before the Russell Wilson acquisition transpired, I think the number was plus 4,000. Since the transaction, it remains plus 4,000. So what does that mean? The needle has not been moved whatsoever. Listen, I love Russ. You know, he's a Wolfpack guy. He played 2 years at NC State, played 2 years at Wisconsin. He's a weird dude, there's no doubt, but, you know, you still have to have a little bit of love for him as a guy that played at your alma mater. I think that, you know, we've seen his best years behind him. I think the Kenny Pickett show's over, but at the same time, I think they have to do.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Something, right? I mean, is Russell Wilson the answer? I'm not sure. They do have wide receivers. I mean, they have talent in Pittsburgh. If you want to get my opinion on that, I think it's probably a null and void situation and probably won't win them any extra games, but I trust Tomlin. The guy doesn't miss the playoffs. Jerry Jeudy, I think just hasn't worked out in Denver as well. So I think it's a good landing spot for him. I believe it's Cleveland. Do I have that right, Kyle?
Yes.
For Jerry Jeudy? Yeah. I mean, that's a talented team. Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy, things are, you know, possibly going in the right direction for the Browns. You know, they have a good running game if they can get their guys healthy. That's obviously very important. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot will emerge here over the next week or so, more so than what we've seen in the last 24, 48 hours. But Russell Wilson to Pittsburgh, good luck. Don't have much else to say but that. I don't see it making any impact whatsoever.
What does Razor Rosenthal make of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers dishing out $200 million to bring back Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans for a team that was basically 9-8?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, the fact that you win a game in the tournament, which I think is impressive, you know, to blow out Philly at home in that playoff game. Baker Mayfield, we tend to forget, pretty good in Cleveland, like for a year, right? He's a number one overall pick. There's a lot of talent there. And I think Mike Evans, to me, is someone I think you have to keep. I think he is an all-world wide receiver. And who else is going to be vastly better than Baker Mayfield that would have been available? I don't mind this, Kyle. I'm sure there are a lot of critics out there that don't like Baker Mayfield, but I liked what I saw. I liked his moxie. I thought they had a chance to win that game at Detroit. They played some really good football at the end of the year, but you know, that win against Philly at home, I know Philly was in the tank, but that was an impressive performance by Tampa Bay. And you have to credit Baker for that as well. I think it's fine. I think it's definitely a better move than Russell Wilson, that's for sure. So Baker's younger, and I think Tampa's a team that probably will dive into the 24th season as a pretty clear favorite to win the South. I don't see it being Carolina or Atlanta, maybe New Orleans, but they're doing what they can to hold serve and maintain that South championship.
What does Razor Rosenthal think of his beloved Buffalo Bills cutting 75% of their starting secondary and continuously making moves to purge their salary cap?
Well, there better be an answer when you're doing this. Getting rid of some great Buffalo Bills over the last 4 or 5 years has been pretty disappointing to see transpire. But those guys in the front office, they have their eyes set on something that we don't know yet. I'm sure. I want to hope there's a good plan for all of this, and I don't want this to be a rebuilding year because I still think we have enough talent on the offensive side of the ball to continue our path to win another AFC East championship and once again disappoint in the playoffs. I think that's kind of what our goal is, to get you to the 2 or 3 seed and to disappoint in the semifinals. So I don't know what to think about it, Kyle. I'm just, it's just one of those things where you have to trust the guys that wear the suits and that make the big money in the front office. And hopefully we find the right people in the draft and hopefully make some good trades or just some good free agent acquisitions come here in the next month or two. But I still think this team's viable, and it's Kansas City's conference, unfortunately, to lose. But maybe just one day I'll be on your podcast talking about the AFC champion Buffalo Bills.
Maybe. We might have to wait a little bit, but their best chance in this window is probably passed them by. And the last thing that we have, it's not technically a move, but let's operate under the assumption that Razor Rosenthal is reacting to the $150 million contract that the Atlanta Falcons are about to give to Kirk Cousins.
good for Kirk. I am a Kirk Cousins fan. I think he's steady. I don't think he's a guy that's going to really take you to the promised land unless he has the right weapons. But how many more guys are as steady as Kirk Cousins as far as, not big games, not on Monday Night Football, not on primetime games, but regular season games. I think Cousins is a guy that you can trust, that he's not going to sink your ship. I just don't know if he's going to take your ship all the way to the promised land. That's a lot of money, Kyle. I wish they would give it to me, but they're not. And I think that, again, we're not in the world of having, a variety of 14 quarterbacks to choose from. I mean, look who's available right now: Baker, Russell, or Kirk Cousins. And I think Kirk's the best of all three. So, good luck to the Falcons. I think that he'll get you some wins. I think he's a steady quarterback, but again, a championship quarterback hasn't proven that yet.
Yeah, it's interesting how for years Kirk Cousins has kind of exploited one of the great inefficiencies of NFL football, I think, and that is, what is the value of very good? Like, people don't know, in this championship or bust culture where job security is probably at a lower level than it's ever been before. Like, it was rare that coaches were churned out every 2 to 3 years, I think, years ago, and general managers were under more pressure to perform. The value of very good is something that has been exploited, because no one, I think that's been a market inefficiency that Kirk Cousins has exploited to near perfection over the past few years to profit lucratively, despite the fact that I believe the furthest he's ever gone in the playoffs is the divisional round in 2019. So that's just one of the things that I think is interesting of that, the career of Kirk Cousins, because he's going to be fine. It's just funny that Atlanta has made the call. This is, we want Kirk Cousins. A third team has decided we want to jump into the Kirk Cousins purgatory, because for years it was always Vikings give him a 1 year extension to kick their salary cap issues down the road. And now Atlanta is saying, yes, we will sign up for the same game.
Well, listen, good for him, man. That guy, he could probably upgrade his wardrobe now with all that money, right? I feel like Kirk Cousins comes into the games and his t-shirt and jeans. I like that guy. I mean, like I said, I think he's a steady guy. He's a winner, and I think that we all like to criticize Kirk Cousins on his primetime games and his playoff performances in the past. But I got to say this, I think if you ask 80% of the fan base in the NFL in a sample size since 2018, would you take Kirk Cousins over your QB? I think most people would say yes. I think you look at there's been a lot of bad QB play with these teams, and Kirk Cousins to me is probably more steady than about 75% or 80% of these quarterbacks.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins has made like top 10 money of any NFL player the last 6 years. At this point, his wardrobe choices are his own. I will just say that at this point, he's going out of his way to make these choices. Razor, thank you as always. Hopefully we'll get some fun with March Madness as the month rolls along.
Can't wait, Kyle. Good luck to everybody listening, and let's in the next 2-3 weeks. It's going to be a lot of fun.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.